I'm going to take you through CSIRO's outlook for electricity generation in Australia and try to explain some of the uncertainties that we see. And then I want to just zero in on, based on that, how does that affect how we decide to spend our research dollar in trying to bring about change, and then try to let you know what we're doing specifically here in Newcastle. This is a bit similar to the diagram Jerry's just shown you, but I want to raise a few extra points. I actually don't think there's much hope of nuclear coming onto the scene, and that's why I haven't included it. It would take several years to get bipartisan support, and then probably a decade before you had all the regulatory and building in place. So I've generally written off that as a technology before 2030. But I think all of these technologies here are in the frame. So we've got coal with capture, gas, solar thermal, wind, and geothermal hot fractured rocks. You could probably also add tidal and waves. Tidal, the best prospects are really in the northwest of Western Australia, so let's let the West Australians worry about that. And wave, I think, is just a big unknown in terms of the environmental impacts and how the community is going to accept that, but it is a possibility. There's also a bunch of technologies at the smaller scale, and solar PVs is a big one there, but I'll talk about that a little bit later. So what I want to show you here is that emissions trading, the whole purpose of emissions trading is to provide a carbon price which is eventually high enough to allow low emission technologies to compete. And you can see that's exactly what's happening to the coal-fired power station over there on the left. Essentially, as we increase the carbon price, its competitiveness starts to wane. So if, and I've jumped straight to $50 there as my first example, and you can see, purple's with no carbon price, and then if we jump to a $50 carbon price in blue, then we can see wind and gas are already able to compete with a coal-fired power station. Gas is about 40% cheaper, 40% of the emissions of coal-fired power, and wind is obviously a zero-emission technology. And then as we add more to the carbon price, we can actually, I should also say that it's somewhere between $50 and $100 a tonne that coal with capture starts to make sense too, in terms of competing with ordinary coal-fired power stations. And I think there's a couple of reasons why we won't see this all just coming on step by step, one technology by one technology. In terms of wind, we've got an issue there where in, for example, South Australia, they've already put a moratorium on further wind turbines because they're not sure how much more the system can handle in terms of having an intermittent supplier of power, with power just coming onto the system whenever the wind blows and disappearing whenever the wind stops. That puts a lot of pressure on the whole grid stability. And I guess, so it won't just be a wind story in the next decade. We'll also see things like solar and, as Jerry was talking about, geothermal. And the thing about solar thermal is it's at the moment looking quite expensive relative to the other options. It's very capital intensive, and it's not supplying baseload power. It's only operating when the sun's shining, obviously, unless we're attaching storage, and that adds a whole bunch of other costs. So for every million they spend on their capital, they're getting about a third of the revenue of baseload suppliers like hot fractured rocks and coal. But on the positive side, they're selling into a much higher priced market. So although from a residential point of view, we generally, unless we're in business, residents pay one price for the whole year. But we know in business that the price changes throughout the day, and on the national market, it changes every 5 minutes. And during the middle of the day, the prices can be very high. So there's There's a possibility here that solar thermal, even though it is higher cost, is getting a higher revenue. So overall, I think we'll see all of these technologies in the next decade, at least at the demonstrations phase. And then once they've been able to prove up that they can meet these this sort of order of costs, if it's achievable, then we're likely to see probably most of them come on board, and that'll be an exciting time. Excuse me. So this is one example of how we try to understand how the evolution of the electricity system might take place. You can see by around 2030, most of the existing coal-fired power stations will be ready to retire. We had a big building program in the 1980s, so I'll just get a glass of water. So we built a lot of coal-fired power stations in the 80s, and they go for about 50 years with refurbishments and so forth. So they're all going to eventually sort of go or be totally refurbished in the sense that it's virtually a new power station anyway. And so there's a big gap to fill there with alternative technologies. Now, I've got geothermal not coming on here until much later, but I think that's only one scenario. And I think with the work they're doing at Geodynamics, we'll probably see them start to come in all around towards the end of next decade. Same with solar thermal. We get a different answer now every time we run the model. And the reason is because we don't have a lot of certainty about the carbon price. This is assuming Garneau's carbon price that he released, starting at about $20 for the 550 ppm scenario and increasing to about $100. But there's no reason why we'll see that type of profile, because it's going to be a free market, so we don't really know. There's a big blue section here which we call distributed generation, and that is likely to be a lot of cogeneration units where we can use the waste heat from power generation, which currently we just throw away at the moment. But I think we'll see a big switch over into solar PVs, and that's because they just are so adaptable to the environment. There's hardly a building that couldn't accommodate them. It's really just the point of reaching that cost level where they can compete with the retail price of electricity, and I can't imagine that's more than a decade away. So we'll see PVs starting to come in around about 2020 as well. So with that sort of outlook, we're quite involved in a lot of those technologies at CSIRO. In Newcastle here and also in Queensland, we do a lot of work in trying to understand how to get more efficient conversion of coal energy and also capturing the CO2. There's lots of different ways to capture CO2, and we're trying to look at the cheapest and most energy efficient way of doing that. And also understanding where are the best places to put CO2. Is it saline aquifers? Is it deep coal seams? These are all important questions in terms of understanding how to make that a low-cost option. We are involved with some of the geological modelling around hot fractured rocks. In Victoria, we do a lot of battery work, so how can we back up the wind suppliers to make them less intermittent? And also, we're very interested in solar thermal energy conversion here in Newcastle. We've got our test site there out at the Newcastle Energy Centre. One of the problems with solar PVs is that the price of silicon has gone up, and one option we're looking at is how can we get involved in putting silicon on putting PVs on plastics rather than silicon. That's what we mean by organic solar PVs. We do a bit of fuel cell work. The last bit I want to talk about is in Newcastle, but we do a lot of work around how to integrate those technologies that are likely to be installed in a residence or in a business, because there's a lot to be worked out there in terms of how you manage all the appliances and so forth. And I'll leave it there. Sorry about the voice. I guess I need to have an early night or something. Okay, thanks.